Question: where is the most dangerous place to be in America? Answer: in your mother's womb. On January 22, 1973, seven men on the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Roe v. Wade decision, which, along with its companion decision, dated the exact same day, Doe v. Bolton, has given us abortion on demand through all 9 months. Since that day to this day, some 57 million unborn babies in America have been killed. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and joining us now to discuss Roe v. Wade and its fallout is the Honorable Darryl White, the founder and president of Retired Judges of America. He resides in Baton Rouge and is a retired judge himself. Judge White, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's a real honor and a privilege to be with you today to speak about a very important cultural issue. And that is the devaluation of human life that was ushered in by the Roe v. Wade opinion.
Yes.
And we need to understand that it was an opinion of some judges. You know, it's, I think, noteworthy that May 1st of every year, dating back to the 1950s, we in America celebrate Law Day as a day to commemorate respect for the rule of law. This is a profound thought, what I'm getting ready to tell you and your listeners. We do not celebrate Jurisprudence Day. Jurisprudence is, of course, the opinions of man, and it is to interpret law, and there's precious little of the Roe v. Wade decision that is grounded in the text of the United States Constitution, which the justices, incidentally, are sworn to uphold.
Yes. Now, two of the judges or justices voted against Roe versus Wade, including Byron White, who called this an act of raw judicial power. That's what he said in his dissent of Roe v. Wade. Your comment on that? An act of raw judicial power?
Well, there's another real good quote by Byron White that I'm not having right at my fingertips right now, but I do agree with Byron White on that, but he also, in one of his dissents, said something to the effect that the court comes closest to illegitimacy when it engages in jurisprudence that is not grounded in the text of the Constitution. And others have said as much. For example, James Madison cautioned America never to separate text from historical background. For if you do, and these are Madison's words, if you do, you will have subverted and perverted the Constitution, which can only end up an illegitimate, and these are his words, bastardized form of government. And it is a subversion and the perversion of the Constitution that has so many God-honoring Americans today wondering what can be done about the federal courts.
You know, it's interesting that even a lot of liberals who say we like the effect of Roe v. Wade, so we agree with its outcome, have actually said that the decision, as a judicial decision, is really poor. It's a bad decision. In fact, there was even a joke that since it was Harry Blackmun who came up with it, they called it Harry's abortion. I mean, it was just so bad as a legal decision. You're a judge, I'm not, or you're a retired judge. What are your thoughts in terms of it, of Roe v. Wade, even just as a legal decision?
Well, again, one has to look at the text of the Constitution and just how far away from the text of the Constitution those on the court had to go to justify Roe v. Wade. And I like the comment by Ronald Reagan that abortion is advocated only by persons who themselves have been born.
Yes, yes.
And it's a sad day in America that nothing has been done to acknowledge the personhood of the unborn, which is one of the things that could be done to undermine the effect of Roe v. Wade as precedent, as having precedental value. And the other thing is the limitation of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court and the other federal judges as well. And that can be done by a simple act of law under Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2 of the Constitution. And Congress has, in a number of other areas, some of them very important, limited the jurisdiction of our Supreme Court and the federal courts where they felt like it was appropriate. And perhaps we'll see someone dust off the exceptions clause, Jerry, in the days ahead with a Congress that would seem to value life, and that we will see a sincere effort to limit the jurisdiction of the federal courts because they really only have, I would encourage your listeners to take a look at Article 3, Section 2, and it speaks of, in cases affecting ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls, and where a state is a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases in which it does have jurisdiction, the court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and to fact, comma, with such exceptions and under such regulations as Congress shall prescribe. My law school constitutional law summary book called Article 3, Section 2, the Exceptions Clause, listen to this phraseology, a constitutionally authorized constitutionally authorized congressional limitation on the jurisdiction of the court. And that infuriates a lot of folk who don't like to think of it that way, but it's consistent with what James Madison in Federalist Number 51 wrote, perhaps the most famous of the Federalist Papers, when he wrote, quote, in Republican governments, the legislative authority necessarily predominates. And so we do have separate and coordinate branches of government, but they are not separate and equal. I can assure you, if you take a look at the budget process and the fact that the court, the Supreme Court, and the federal courts must come to Congress every year to operate their lights and pay the salaries, et cetera, it's clear that there is a supremacy in the legislative branch in Congress. And that's the way our founders set it up. They intended it to be that way.
Now, were you a judge, practicing judge, at the time of 1973 when this the Supreme Court decision came down?
No, I was not.
Okay.
I was a young parent. My wife and I married in 1970, and we were...
I was just curious. The reason I was asking is because I just wondered what the ripple effect was among those serving on the bench in any capacity or, you know, in any particular court or whatever, especially after Roe v. Wade, because it does seem to be in some ways out of the tradition of America's jurisprudence. It basically plowed new ground, and so I'm just kind of curious what the ripple effect was or the initial effect.
I was still on active duty with the United States Army. In fact, involved in the the wind down of the Vietnam War. I had the privilege to serve on Operation Homecoming, which is the repatriation of the prisoners of war, as an intelligence lieutenant at Fort Halliburton, Maryland,
right,
with the intelligence debriefing of those coming back from Vietnam. And it was a sad day, and it's very much in need of being redressed by the country as a whole.
But now the Supreme Court has decided a few times afterwards, and for example, they had a shot at possibly overturning Roe v. Wade, and they decided not to. I believe the year was 1991, or maybe it was 92, in the Casey versus Planned Parenthood decision, and Anthony Kennedy was the one who changed over. Even though he was a Ronald Reagan appointee, he disappointed conservatives by voting with the pro-abortion slight majority.
I understand there's a very sad chronicle associated with Anthony Kennedy's flip-flop on that issue, when many expected him to come down on the side of life, and,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up after valley of decision moment, walking down to Harry Blackmun's chambers and linking up with him. I think you can probably find something online in connection. Mm-hmm. You know, committed believers need to pray for Anthony Kennedy in great earnestness. My Sunday school class does, I can tell you. And Anthony Kennedy is a man who has said this about the concept of liberty. At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, and of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. Jerry, that is not what is at the heart of liberty. As a matter of fact, if you look at
that's anarchy.
That was published, that was edited by the American Bar Foundation, published in 1978, called Sources of Our Liberties, it chronicles over 30 documents leading up to the Constitution that are at the heart of liberty, and there are over 150 references, Jerry, in those documents dealing with the Magna Carta and others that reference our liberties coming from God, coming from a creator. And there's a very profound statement that was made by the San Gabriel, California Elementary School Textbook League in 1961. This is published in John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Education. In fact, that's the only place I've seen what I'm getting ready to tell you, having been published. But listen to this warning. Withhold from the children for one generation the truth of rights endowed by a creator. That's straight out of the Declaration of Independence.
Sure.
Withhold from the children for one generation the truth of rights endowed by a creator, and our Constitution could be altered and our freedoms voted away without the citizens ever even knowing the cause of their slavery.
Wow. Isn't that true? Yeah, and you know, talk about this example with the God-given rights. The first of those God-given rights endowed by our Creator, according to the National Birth Certificate, which is the Declaration of Independence, is the right to life. And yet that right is being denied to the unborn in Roe.
Yeah, well, indeed it is. And it's reminiscent of George Orwell's comment that political speech, and really Roe v. Wade could be called the quintessential political speech. Political speech is designed to make lies sound truthful, murder sound respectable, and to give the appearance of solidity to pure wind.
Mm. You know what's interesting, Judge, is that Roe today, the Roe, that is Norma McCorvey, doesn't disagree anymore with Wade. Roe agrees with Wade, so it's no longer Roe v. Wade. She was pro-abortion rights at the time. She just wanted to have an abortion, and she was led along the primrose path along the lines of, hey, just follow this, and you'll, you know, hopefully get your abortion or whatever. And instead, it created this scenario, and then years later, she ended up becoming a Christian and became pro-life. So now Roe v. Wade, in fact, Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe in Roe v. Wade, tried to have the work of her previous life essentially undone, but the Supreme Court wouldn't hear anything of it.
And now she works tirelessly, from what I understand, in pro-life capacities. You
right,
know,
exactly.
In discerning how we should pray for Anthony Kennedy, the justice who is really the man in the middle, because he will be the deciding vote, presumably, on the marriage issue when
right.
the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision gets to the point of a final decision, is to pray that he would have a holy fear of God and an understanding that he soon will appear before the judgment seat of God himself. Matthew 12:36 and other scriptures make it crystal clear that we will give an account for every idle word, thought, indeed, that's a very profound thought. Senator Daniel Webster, reputed as the great defender of the Constitution and one of the most profound of our U.S. senators, when asked late in life what was the most profound thought that had ever crossed his mind, he immediately said, my accountability to God.
Mm.
And one of the things that we do, Jerry, at Retired Judges of America is to replicate a tradition that has gone on in the U.S. Supreme Court and bears Anthony Kennedy's signature and every other justice's signature for over 100 years.
We have 10 seconds left.
Is a Bible. It's called the Harlan Bible. I would encourage your listeners to Google that story, the Harlan Bible, and understand that this is the document that they have affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Judge.